Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Andrej Babiš wants to slash the projected expenditures for the country's EU presidency by half. A finance ministry proposal for next year's budget sets the deficit at 40 billion crowns, and around 30 scientists and business people from all over the world are taking part in a conference in Prague launching the annual Innovation Week. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has said he wants to slash the projected expenditures for the country's EU presidency in the second half of 2022 by half. The projected expenditures for the presidency are currently at 2.7 billion crowns, which the Prime Minister says he considers unnecessarily high. In an interview for the daily Hospodarské noviny, Babiš said that in his view the costs of the presidency should not exceed 1.3 billion crowns, roughly 50 million euros. In 2020, the government is expected to spend 178 million crowns in preparatory works. A finance ministry proposal for next year's budget, which is to be debated by the government next week, sets next year's deficit at 40 billion crowns, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš announced at a press conference on Monday. The draft budget forecasts state expenditures of 1.6 trillion crowns and revenues at 1.5 trillion. According to Mr. Babiš, the budget plan also envisages a hike in public sector wages and higher pensions. The first draft budget proposal is to be presented to the lower house on the 31st of May. Around 30 scientists and business people from all over the world are taking part in a conference in Prague on Monday launching the annual Innovation Week. Among the main guests at the conference are the young American astrophysicist Sabrina Gonzalez-Pasterski, or Anna Du, a 13-year-old American who invented a microplastic detecting robot to help fight ocean pollution. The event, organized for the fourth consecutive year by Prague's European Leadership and Academic Institute, will offer more than 100 accompanying events across the Czech Republic, including seminars and workshops. Czech heavy vehicles manufacturer Tatra Trucks will supply 12 fire engines to Israeli security forces, the company announced on Monday. The order is worth approximately 100 million crowns. As part of the deal, the Czech truck maker will also provide training for Israeli firefighters to operate the engines. The first Tatras are to be delivered to Israel at the end of the year. The annual charity run for Paměť národa, or Memory of the Nation Institute, raised 870,000 crowns, the organizers said on Monday. The fourth edition of the charity run took place on Saturday in 10 locations across the Czech Republic under the motto "For all who have not given up." More than 2,700 people took part in the event. The funds will help to document the fate of the country's freedom fighters who fought against Nazism and communism. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Tuesday is expected to be partly cloudy to overcast with occasional rain showers and storms. Daytime highs will range between 15 and 19 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková, and you can find more news at radio.cz. Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's program, the Czech government wants to ban the practice of dual quality sales of food and other products. The 2017 law governing wine sales remains highly controversial. We have a roundup of the latest Czech sports news, and later we meet Radek Špicar, a business leader who has been spurred by the UK's Brexit vote to fight Czech Euroscepticism in a series of debates around the country. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech government is poised to amend the Food and Consumer Protection Acts as to ban the practice of dual quality sales of food and other products. If signed into law, retailers would be banned from selling inferior quality products that appear to be the same as superior ones sold elsewhere in the European Union. Brian Kennedy has the details.
Central European member states have long been the driving force in pushing the EU to ban dual-quality product sales, arguing that the single market should not have a de facto double standard. But a long-anticipated revamp of EU consumer protection rules, approved last month by the European Parliament, stops short of outright banning the practice. As far as Brussels is concerned, if the packaging accurately lists the ingredients or contents, such sales aren't illegal. For now, it has been left to national consumer authorities whether or not to pursue legal action against companies engaged in dual-quality product practices. The Czech government is ready to do exactly that. On Monday, ahead of a cabinet meeting at which the proposals were ready to be discussed, the country's agriculture minister announced fines of up to 50 million crowns against retailers rather than producers. It's a far cry from what EU Justice and Consumers Commissioner Věra Jourová, a Czech national, had sought 2 summers ago when successfully pushing to amend the bloc's unfair commercial practice directive to forbid dual food quality sales in principle.
We want them to raise the quality of the products where it is at this moment lower. Second best option is to rebrand it. But this is not what I wish. I want to have high quality everywhere. We are not naming and shaming. We have not mentioned any concrete brands. But when we have the evidence, I will not hesitate to advise the consumers not to buy these products.
In fact, tests carried out by Czech researchers have found many concrete examples. For instance, the same brand of frozen fish fingers sold in Germany with a fifth more fish than the same product sold here, the same chocolate with far less cocoa, the same laundry detergent with less cleaning agents, and the list goes on. Tomáš Proza, head of the Czech Confederation of Commerce and Tourism, says apart from the EU not actually banning such sales, and debate still raging on how different packaging must be, retailers here are effectively blocked from offering the superior products.
The current agreement in Brussels solves half of the problem. There can't be one label and package for two different products. That's a good first step. But to really solve this problem, Czech stores, for example, must be able to buy those better fish fingers that are available in Germany. Today they must go through a local distributor that offers only the worst version. They can't put both on their counters and let customers choose.
Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has met separately in recent weeks with Czech and international retailers and distributors to discuss the situation and announced plans to meet again with all parties concerned before putting the proposed amendments to the Food and Consumer Protection Acts to a vote in Parliament. Meanwhile, the proposed amendments before the Czech government are stricter than the EU's compromise and will likely enter into force sooner.
Brian Kennedy with that report. 2 years after a law aiming to clamp down on bootleg wine sales and low-quality wines came into force, it still sparks controversy among wine growers and wine sellers. While the Agriculture and Food Inspection Authority claims the quality of wines sold on the market has significantly improved, small winemakers say it is putting them out of business. Daniela Lazarová has more.
The 2017 legislation was aimed at bringing higher quality and greater transparency on the wine market. The network of small wine shops could no longer sell barrel wine on tap to clients who would bring their own bottles for the purpose. It stipulated that salespeople were obliged to report expected deliveries of barrel wine and give inspectors from the Agriculture and Food Inspection Authority time to perform tests of quality before packaging and selling the product. The Association of Wine Growers says the strict new conditions governing the sale of barrel wine has forced many sale wine shop owners to close down, reducing the number of outlets for small wine growers who find it hard to sell to big retail stores and supermarket chains. The special wine shops that sell barrel wine are now having to bottle it or sell bag-in-box wines, which meant making a significant investment. They claim that even so, the number of their clients has dropped. Jiří Maďetič from the Association of Winemakers says the law has had a negative impact on small sales outlets.
Some have closed down, others are now selling bottled wine, and the rest have invested in bag-in-box packaging devices and have become little more than wine fillers. Paradoxically, the law allows this. There is no distinction between those who made the wine and who bottled it. If they package the wine, they can sell it as if it were their own.
Local wine growers are also railing against the fact that imported wines bottled in the Czech Republic bear the Czech flag, which can be confusing for buyers. They argue that the law should clearly distinguish between wine producers and sellers, which is not presently the case. Whether lawmakers will respond to this demand is not clear. The authors of the law argue that the law is clearly having the desired effect, since in the past few years the amount of poor quality wines has significantly dropped. In the years between 2013 and 2016, 35% to 43% of wine samples were found lacking. The number of inferior wines uncovered has now halved, and inspectors say the old practice of diluting imported wines or lacing them with sugar has been significantly curbed. Moreover, after the legislation came into force, 7,000 new small wine sales outlets registered their businesses for fear of tough fines that could hit them.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. And now I'm joined in the studio by Ian Willoughby, who's got the summary of the latest Czech sports news.
First up today, it's soccer, and Slavia Prague have been crowned champions of the Czech First League for the second time in three seasons, after sealing the title on Sunday with a nil-all away draw at Baník Ostrava. That result gave Slavia an unassailable points lead over their nearest rival Viktoria Plzeň, with one game remaining in the superstructure. It's an extra five games in which the top, middle and bottom groups in the top flight have faced one another after the regular season finished. Slavia manager Jindřich Trpišovský had this to say following the match that sealed the 19th title in the club's history.
Naturally, in this moment, we are happy that we managed it. Above all, it's a relief because it has been a long competition. It's also a beautiful feeling to have brought joy to people around the country and to those who followed us here. But right now, I would use the word relief.
Midfielder Tomáš Souček was one of Slavia's key players on the road to the championship.
It was really hard. We had a very demanding season, including our run in the Europa League. So we're all terribly happy that we managed to wrap it up one game before the end of the league season.
Slavia will be able to really toast their title success at home next Sunday, when they welcome traditional rival Sparta Prague to Eden. Slavia were out in front for much of 2018-2019, though last year's champions Viktoria Plzeň did narrow the gap somewhat recently. Their manager Pavel Vrba said the West Bohemians could also be proud of their season.
Let me speak about some facts. We accumulated a huge number of points, more than we earned last season. We took 7 points in the group stage of the Champions League, which happened for the first time in 3 years in the competition. So I would rate this season as a successful one.
Ice hockey and the Czech Republic are continuing to impress at the World Championships in Slovakia. Coach Miloš Žiha's team now have 5 wins out of 6 games in Group B, with the most recent an 8-0 drubbing of Austria on Sunday. Following their next outing against Switzerland on Tuesday, the Czechs will begin the knockout stage of the competition. Karolina Plíšková has climbed to number 2 in the world rankings after becoming the first Czech woman since 1978 to win tennis's Italian Open in Rome. She overcame Joanna Konta of the UK 6-3, 6-4 in Sunday's final. And Petra Kvitová, who is now 6th in the world, is in danger of missing out on the French Open, which begins in a week's time. She revealed after Rome that she was suffering from a calf injury. And that's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Czechs go to the polls in the elections to the European Parliament this weekend, and one person who has gained keen insights into how Czechs feel about the European Union is Radek Špicar, who has taken part in dozens of debates about Europe throughout the Czech Republic. He is Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One.
Radek Špitzar is vice president of the Czech Confederation of Industry. But since last year, spurred into action by the UK's Brexit vote, he's also been travelling the length and breadth of the country, trying to convince ordinary Czechs of the merits of remaining in the European Union. When we spoke, Špitzar shared the insights he's gleaned from dozens of such public debates. But first I asked him why he felt the pro-EU atmosphere in Czech society prior to accession in 2004 had evidently dissipated so much.
There are many reasons for that. The first one is the role of politicians. Unfortunately, in the past, we had politicians who blamed the EU for everything which didn't work here in this country and didn't give it any credits for all the things that we successfully completed. Secondly, those pro-European people who were happy that we joined the EU disappeared from the public space after we joined the EU. I can include myself into this group, which turned out to be a big mistake. Then people don't know much about the EU. They are preoccupied with their own problems and they don't follow what's going on in Brussels. Therefore, they don't understand how the decisions there are being made. That's why they think that Brussels dictates us something. That's what they often tell me, and that we cannot influence anything in Brussels. And last but not least, people see mistakes made by the European Union in the last couple of years. I mean, like violating its own rules when it comes to Stability Pact, admitting Greece into Eurozone, although it was not fulfilling the criteria, etc. So these are the main reasons.
Early last year, you began trying to convince people in person at public debates that leaving the EU would be a bad idea. What led you to begin doing that?
That's very simple. I was traveling around the Czech Republic before the referendum because I thought that Czech Republic's membership in the EU would be beneficial for us.
So you're talking back in like 2003 or
absolutely,
something?
Absolutely, absolutely. With a couple of friends, we were traveling to large cities, small cities, villages, talking to people about the EU and when it's gonna bring to us if we join the EU. Then we joined and we congratulated ourselves, celebrated, and then disappeared from the public space. And we thought that everybody is as happy as we were with the membership because we could travel freely across Europe. We were able to study using EU scholarships, etc., etc. And we thought that people saw it in the same way, which was not the case. And then Brexit came. We saw what can happen. And we realized that we are in a very similar situation when it comes to the popularity of the EU, for example, when it comes to the level of Euroscepticism, which is extremely strong in this country. When it comes to the adoption of euro, we are the most Eurosceptic nation in the whole EU, although our economy benefits probably the most from the access to the internal market, for example. So I decided to do something about it, not just to talk about the pros of our membership on TV. And I said publicly, actually, that if anybody is willing to talk about the EU and sends me an invitation, I will gladly accept it and I will come. I didn't meant it as a joke, but I didn't expect that more than 50 people actually will send me their invitations. And because I said it publicly, well, I have to do it. So now I'm in the middle, I would say. I've visited 25 cities, talked to hundreds of people, and I continue in this with this activity.
And at what kind of places are you meeting people?
All kinds of places, actually, because I don't care about the number of people I meet, because it's not about me. It's about the topic. I really care about the topic. I accept invitations from a group of six people in Josefov, in a local pub, who argue about the EU and who wanted to invite somebody with whom they will be able to discuss it. So six people in Josefov pub. Then a church in Prague 8, that was the first stop where it all started. Then one of the last stops in Olomouc, more than 100 people at Olomouc University. So it's very diverse.
And what kind of people go? Are they mainly pro-EU? Mm-hmm. Are you kind of preaching to the converted to
Absolutely.
Some
that's
degree?
That's a very good question. And I get asked this question from mostly journalists very often. And their questions made me think about the audience. And I found out that the most violent Eurosceptics never show up. They are brave on internet, on Facebook and Twitter, but face to face, they don't dare to show up and start a discussion. So I rather meet with people who have their doubts or who tend to think that they lack enough proper information about the EU and they want to learn something. But most of the people are moderate pro-Europeans and they are missing arguments in their talks with their relatives, friends, colleagues at work, etc. So they basically invite me to get arguments that they will later on be able to use in their discussions with their with people around them. And I was unhappy about it at the beginning because you know, my ambition was to talk to those who criticize the EU, etc. But then later on, I realized that that it's okay to provide arguments with ambassadors of the case who will distribute it in their environments is of the same importance, actually.
And what arguments are they most impressed by? Which are they most able to use, do you think?
There are two, and one which was really surprising to me. I'm a student of international relations. I studied history. So for me, the beginning of the EU integration is no secret. I knew it was a very pragmatic project that the founding fathers tried to do something to keep peace in Europe after the Second World War, and that the economic integration is basically a means how to achieve it. So I knew this, and I found it stupid, and I didn't dare to explain it to anybody because I expected that that everybody knew it. Well, very limited number of people knows it, and when I explain it, they react in an extremely positive way. They're like, okay, so this is to keep peace. That's why we are not fighting with each other, because we are so interconnected economically that it wouldn't make sense for anybody. So this is an argument that people really buy and consider very important. Secondly, and that's also surprising, or was surprising to me, they kind of reflect what's going on in international affairs, in global politics, and they feel that in order to be able to face the United States and Russia and China, we have to be united.
When you meet people who have concerns about the EU or worries about the EU, typically, what are they?
They think that we have very limited influence in Brussels, that it's like Vienna centuries ago, Berlin during the Second World War, and Moscow during the communist era, that the important strategic decisions are being made elsewhere out of our country, and we have no influence over them. So that's one thing. Secondly, they are afraid of the EU cohesion with respect to the migration crisis. They are afraid that EU will be, even in the future, violating its own rules, which will question its own existence and principles and values and stuff like that. People are worried. And last but not least, there are a lot of EU myths, and people, because they don't understand how the EU is working, they, for example, many people, I would say most people I talk to, have no idea that such a body like EU Council exists. They have no idea that that our Prime Minister is actually attending summits of the EU Council, without whom you can hardly make any important strategic decision. So people don't know that we participate at this and have a very, very strong say on a number of issues. And because they don't understand the daily functioning, and I don't blame them because it's damn complicated, but because they don't understand how it all works, they believe in stupid, you know, legends like the EU is prohibiting efficient vacuum cleaners and stuff like that.
Have you ever had any, on your trips around the country, any strongly negative reactions or depressing experiences?
Yes, I had actually. Once, there was a debate in Northern Moravia, and it was a combination of a secondary school and a vocational school. And I have to say that I was not frustrated and depressed about their reactions towards the EU. The discussion was okay, but I was depressed and frustrated because of the relationship between the two groups. It really seemed to me that students of the vocational school disrespected those students from the gymnasium, from the secondary school, and vice versa. There was no contact between them, no communication, no respect, and that was very depressing, I have to say.
And did it kind of feel like the national situation in miniature, where you have the urban elites and the rest, the
unfortunately,
poorly off?
Unfortunately, to a certain extent, yes. I realized that it really begins on the school level, you know, even on the secondary school level, which is sad, and we should do something about it as a country. Otherwise, it will grow and become only a bigger of a problem.
Radek, what have you learned from the process of traveling around the country and speaking to members of the public like this?
People tell me, you know, you sacrifice a lot of time and energy, and why do you do it, etc. And I realized recently that I probably benefit more than I give to those people who meet with me. And I learned a lot, actually, and I changed my mind over a number of topics. I realized that how Brussels is functioning is too complicated, must be simplified, otherwise people will be not able to follow it. That we have to change the role of the parliament, otherwise people will not show up during the elections because the parliament is not worth its name. You know, it cannot even propose its own laws, for example. I changed to a certain extent my opinion about euro adoption in this country. 70% of people are afraid of euro, and we should take it seriously. So there's a need to talk to people about pros and cons of euro adoption. And I don't blame politicians for not setting up a date of the adoption. I blame them for not being active in this debate.
Initially, you started this whole process out of a fear that Czechs could somehow find themselves in a situation where there is a referendum on remaining in the EU, and that could go, from your perspective, the wrong way. Today, how likely is that scenario, do you think?
I think it's much less likely. We have a coalition government. Fortunately, the major political parties are not even considering anything like that. So I don't think this is the danger. But because of that, I realize that we must do something, and we should be active in the public space, saying openly what is not working in the European Union and how we should change it or repair it, but at the same time saying what works very well and what we have to keep.
And I presume, like many people who are against the Czech Republic leaving the EU, you don't like the word that begins with C.
Exactly. That's why I'm not using it, because it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's what you don't want.
Business leader Radek Špičar was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.